Welcome to the Better Than Best Academy, where we have inspiring conversations with extraordinary people, and today is no different. I'm with my new friend that's actually not too far from me out in Oklahoma. He's a entrepreneur, pastor, father, and husband. He's been in ministry for over 2 decades. I won't go telling his whole life story. I'll let him dive into that in a minute, but his name is Cole. And now, Cole, as we dive into today's conversation, I would love to open by asking you, what would make today's conversation extraordinary?
Oh, man, you threw me a curveball. You didn't tell me about this question. I think just connecting with people heart to heart, to me in the kingdom of God, it's all about heart connections and relationships and iron sharpening iron. So I would just hope somebody out there today makes a heart connection with us and maybe God speaks to them, that they get some clarity in their life.
Come on. Clarity is always great. The heart connection I'm always here for. Man, Cole, since we've literally just met, I mean, I've seen some of your content. You've seen some of mine. We took about 2 minutes to officially meet. I would love for you to kind of share your story a little bit and let the people listening and me myself kind of hear some of that. So who is Cole?
Yeah, absolutely, man. That's awesome to ask. I grew up in South Carolina, pastor's kid, upstate South Carolina, diehard Clemson fan. Here in Oklahoma. And throughout my childhood growing up, I had, you know, a relationship with God that you would expect from a pastor's kid. You know, my dad preached on hell on Saturday night, Sunday nights, I answered the altar call. Went through a rough spot throughout high school. And in those high school years, really got out on the wild side of things. 19 years old, in a very unexpected moment, really going to a church service that I was going to hang out with friends at. Jesus encountered me and met me. I gave my heart in that to him in a way I had never done in my whole life. And it set me on a new path. And I literally walked away from everything that I had built up from friends and all of that. And I started pursuing the call of God on my life. I had always resisted being in ministry because I watched my dad be a pastor and face hurt and disappointment and betrayals that can sometimes come from that. So I sort of avoided that and then got connected into a church that my dad was not pastoring and was able to become disciple of a guy there that really just helped me grow my faith. And God started speaking to me. It was one of those moments that I was like, I know I'm supposed to pursue more of a ministry avenue at the time. So went to Bible college. And then over the next year, I was in Bible college for a year in Ohio, came back to South Carolina and met a guy that became a mentor to me over the next 20 years, like a dad to me. And I joined an internship that he was leading. And my world opened up. He had a missions organization traveling the world. And I really became what would be a spiritual son to him, really allowing him to really show Jesus to me and disciple me. Years later, he moved to Oklahoma City to take a church, become a pastor in a church out here that he had been in a relationship for years. He was in his 50s at the time. And I came out too. I was a 21, 22-year-old that really had nothing to lose. And 1991 Maxim on the back of a Penske truck. Drove across the country and pulled what I could step in the car and the truck would be my stuff. It was somebody else's sandwich. I got out here to Oklahoma City and just started really working in the hands-on in ministry. Shortly after, became ordained, moved into pastoral roles, just really pursuing God on my life. And then in 2008, I met, become my wife. We dated for a couple of years and got engaged. Got married in 2011. And so this is sort of the life story on that level. At the same time, throughout my entire time in Oklahoma City, being in ministry, we don't always make a lot of money. So that's not necessarily a way you can feed a family. So I would always have side hustles. I was like sort of the guy that they knew, Cole, he ain't making a lot of money, but he's always going to find money and he's going to find a way to make ends meet. And so I started buying and selling cars. I would change brakes on people's cars. I would go paint houses. I'd do whatever I needed to do to make ends meet after hours in my church role. And that moved into our marriage years, 2011, when we got married. I kept the side hustles on because I had to now provide for a wife. Progress, we started having kids. 2017, it was like out of nowhere, every side hustle I had dried up in a way that was so like weird that you said, this might actually be God doing this. Because it was not really explainable. My wife and I, with two kids, small kids, and a house, I hit what I would call rock bottom of what you can be financially. I had no income coming in outside of a very meager church salary. And we were going to a pastor's retreat in Missouri in October of 2018. And I told Eva, bring it in your computer because we got to redo our budget up there. we're cutting everything up. We're cutting, you know, any TV, internet, whatever we don't have to survive, we got to cut off. We don't have any money. You know, when I'm saying no money left, we couldn't have survived a flat tire at that point. And I remember at Pastor Retreat, God speaking to me, and he challenged me, and he said to me, I want you to start a business, and I'm going to bless it. And out of that business, you'll teach people how to do business my way. And so what he was challenging me on was I had to get out of the mindset of a side hustle and get to the mindset of being a kingdom businessman. I said, okay, so what do I do? And he just said, what's in your hand? So this is November. I had managed the facilities at our church for a few years, and we got a large facility at the church I'm still at today. And so managing that was a full-time job by itself. And I met subcontractors, you know, painters, HVAC, electricians, whatever. I knew a little bit of everyone. So about 6 months before that moment with God, I had started getting bids on my house for paint. Now, listen, I think painting is what you have to do in hell. And that's the worst thing in the world. It's pure punishment. And I can't stand it. So my wife, like, let's paint the house. I'm like, let's not paint the house. And she's like, well, I'll paint the house. I'm like, that means I'll paint the house. So no, let's not do that. Let's call painters and see when it's going to cost to paint the house. So all the married people know what that means. So I called painters and the prices came in and they were all the same. And they're all crazy high in my opinion, because I knew what it should cost, because I knew how much paint costed. I knew how much labor costed. I'm like, dude, I'm good at math. I mean, I'm pretty decent at that. And I was like doing the numbers. And I'm like, and there's some meat on the bones here. Right? So I didn't get the house painted. And he's like, they had the money and I painted the house. Another story for another day, but came to that later that year and got the what's in your hand. I'm like, well, I know how to paint. I don't like it, but I know how to paint. I know there's money there. So, okay. So I text my brother-in-law and I said, hey, Tim, if I get us a paint job, will you paint a house? And he was like, yeah, sure. And he didn't get it to happen. So I got on Google Images, downloaded a house being painted on the outside, posted it in Facebook groups, sent opening next week for painting, messaged me, I'll come do a bid. And I got to my inbox thing and I went and did a bid and I came in underpriced. I knew I was going to undercut everybody's prices because I wanted that job. Even if I didn't make much money, I needed that one to get the next one. And so I got the paint job, painted, made some money, and found out that that was a journey I needed to continue on. Got another job, went into Christmas, did Christmas lights on people's houses. Had a couple guys then that we're all still side hustling a little bit, but we're all sort of making money together. And then got to January, I was like, now what? And it's amazing because I feel like God gives us the ability to, once we imagine with him, he gives us the ability to hear differently and opportunities come that we would not have previously recognized. And so it was like through conversations with people, I would just get another opportunity that was in the same field. And so before you know it, April of that year, I mean, I'm 5 months into business and I'm not really running a full-fledged business yet. I'm still full-time at the church. I get the opportunity to become the primary maintenance company for Starbucks statewide. It started with one ticket, but what we started doing was saying yes to the next ticket. And I would say no to nothing. And I'm doing some weird stuff with these companies. This is not anything bad, but we went and had to clean up the murder scene. I can't name the vendor we had to pick it up, clean them up for, but they just called me. It's like, you can't even bill us for this. You just got, hold on, I'll send you cash out. So we had to do just some crazy stuff. We'd say yes, and we became reliable. So Starbucks, the Walgreens, like Barnes and Noble. Before you know it, we have all these national retailers that are using us as maintenance. I'm talking cold, just changing ceiling tiles, simple stuff. And we turned into about a company of five people because it took a lot to take care of all these tickets. And what I realized God was telling me was, we're going to build a business together. And this business is going to speak to other business people on how to do business the right way. And I live by my convictions in it. And just to get to the end of this story, 2021, my senior pastor and spiritual father died unexpectedly. And it was, God shifted me. It wasn't with that, but it was around the same time. God spoke to me clearly and said, I want your business to explode, but you can't do it now or you'll explode. So we are shifting a strategy. A month and a half later, bought our first flip house. It's February 2021. One house led to another. The next house led to two houses. Before you know it, we're doing two or three houses at a time. And as of November 22 of this past year, we connected up with a company that has helped us scale even more as a God connection. And now we're doing 6 to 7 flips at a time. I got a full team that do construction with us, a management structure management team, and I'm able to do remodels for customers. And all of this is what we like to call our sandbox. It's where God works in our life so we can speak to men and women that want to own businesses, that do own businesses, and talk about things like integrity, imagination, stewardship, and things such as that. So I know that was a long story, but that's the shortest a preacher can do.
Come on. I love it. And nothing wrong with a little bit of long-winded preaching. I come from loving that. Man, there's so much that I can take out of that story. I was sitting there taking notes let's try to take our time. So circling back. So you mentioned you're a PK kid. You lived that preacher's kid life. You were, you know, how that is, you know, you see, it's almost like we get given, which I wasn't a PK, but being around church, I get it. It's almost like sometimes we're given this opportunity to see faith and see what it's like to follow God, but it takes us discovering it ourselves to really, really build that connection. And that's super interesting. And then of course, being a spiritual son and being planted in the house it's important. I agree. That's been a little bit of my journey. I mean, I'm not a preacher's kid, but I definitely got heavily involved in church a while back and just never left. And grateful for what God's been doing in my life. But yeah, let's see what else happened. And when you got into all these side hustles, so you said it was like your side hustle king. I think that's so interesting. And I'm sure some people listening to this are going to relate to that because, you know, this entrepreneurial spirit, when it's in you, you can't help but figure something out. And then how in 2017, it almost seemed like the side hustles dried up. And I can't imagine how that felt, ultimately getting to one of your lowest rock bottom moments and then realizing, you know, it's being faithful with what's in your hand and it's doing what you're skilled at despite not loving it. Because I know a lot of people don't want to hear that. And it's tough to think of sometimes because we've been given these gifts that we're skilled at, but not necessarily love doing. And I think my wife's calling on my phone, so... If it's going, yeah, if it's gone crazy, I'll give it a chance to stop. I was like, hold on, babe. But we'll give it a second. Come on. All I do is I just shaking in front of me.
I get it.
Let's see. Maybe I can swipe up. Give me 1 second. Okay. I think we're good. All right. But yeah. So like, it's this idea of doing what you're skilled at and being faithful with what's in your hand. I think that's huge. And God gives us the ability to hear opportunities. I thought that was cool. I'm just like, just going to go down the list of the notes that I was taking and gleaning from your story you were just telling. Now we got to pause here though. You said that you had to clean up a murder scene. You gotta give us a little bit more details and
It was a Saturday morning. It's a national vendor, a retail company, and it was tragic. It was a guy shot a lady right in front of the store, and she called me, and it was actually through a connection with somebody else. She said, "Listen, I need to ask you to do something for me if you can." It's pretty hard to ask. She's like, she told me sort of what happened. Somebody got murdered in front of a store down in a really bad part of Oklahoma, not even OKC. She said, and I need somebody to go down there. She said, hazmat's already come and done some stuff outside. What we're worried about is it went to the glass of projectile went through the glass of the store, and I need you to get back there and clean up on that. And I need you just to text me how much. It was so sketchy. It was like, I mean, is this like, can I just really do this? Like, are you going to meet me in the back alley and like slide cash in my hand? Like, how does this go down? And that's about what happened. She cash apped me. They couldn't pay an invoice. They couldn't see an invoice. They couldn't be an invoice for it. It just had to be completely off. So like they spend it out of petty cash, I guess. And so I called one of my buddies and I'm like, hey, man, yeah, like I got a tough stomach. And we hopped in the truck and we drove and we did what we needed to do. And it was a really good pay. I will say that.
That's wild. Yeah, I can't imagine, but. I just had to hear more. When you said that, I was like, wait a minute, what? You can't just breeze over that. But as you're talking about, and you have all these ideas, and kind of circling back to this to get a little bit more practical. So a lot of times as entrepreneurs or people that want to just run after a lot of different things at once, I'm curious, how do you know what to focus on?
Oh man, you're speaking something right now. I'm going through. Okay. So I definitely have my experience with that right now. probably about a year ago, I started hitting a wall. Entrepreneurs, like you just said, can do multiple things well. You take an entrepreneur and you combine them like someone like me, and there's a lot of these out there that have ADHD as well. And that's no joke. It becomes like I could start a new business every other day. I have an idea and I'm like, I can make money doing that. And I realized that from the beginning of our business until about a year ago, I didn't notice a change that happened a year ago. The business was like, God, I have to have you every minute of every day to make this work. It's a faith thing. Like if I'm going to make payroll Friday, I need to have enough work to make payroll Friday. And then, you know, I remember sitting on the couch 2019, 2020 on Friday nights after I'm payrolling out and telling Eva, I mean, it was dramatic. I mean, you know, my wife, she just sort of like jokes at my drama. Like, oh, we're going under, I know business. And it was like week after week. And she finally just started saying, oh, you said this last week. And God got us another week. I'm not even listening. And it really was, though. It was faith. I was like, God, you have to get us jobs next week because we got payroll next Friday and I'm providing for families. And that was going good until we finally got to where I didn't have to worry about payroll anymore. And enough funds in the bank, or enough cash in the bank. And it was almost as if it was subtle that I made a shift. I'll tell the story in reverse order. I hit a wall. And then Easter Sunday of this past Easter Sunday, it was like the wall came to a full stop. Mm-hmm. And I remember I called my wife and I was like, babe, I don't know what's happening, but I'm about to crash. Immensely. No sin, none of that.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was the crash, but that was the beginning. It took me about another 60 days to hit what I would call rock bottom. And so sort of July, went to a retreat in North Carolina, early July, and God met us there. I was able to deal with some issues I had forgot about from my childhood, my PK years. Nothing that was like necessarily overly traumatic, but still painful. Yeah. Forgot about, buried. And I remember it started us on a journey over the next few weeks. And end of July, I was feeling really like, God, you brought healing to one area of my life. And I remember him telling me, he said, if I would have let your business continue to grow, it was leaving the level that your health could sustain. It would have crushed you. So I had to pause you and let your healing bring you to a point that you had the capacity for the next level. And I'm like, okay, that's good. I thank you. Thank you, Jesus, for not letting me get crushed. But I remember he said, he brought the scripture to me, faith without works is dead. And obviously, traditionally, we would all believe in our theological exegesis that is communicating about salvation.
Yeah.
I have to have faith and I have to combine my faith with works. But it's also a principle that runs throughout your entire life with Jesus, is that faith is first, work is second. It's not work without faith is dead, it's faith without works is dead. And what I realized was a subtle shift I made was because there's opportunity around every corner. I actually said yes to almost everything in my striving to find success in the name of God. So it wasn't that I did it in the name of God. I was saying, God be the glory, right? That I was saying all the right things. But inside, I was working my tail off and then praying God to bless it. I was like, I'm going to do this. Now, God, sell this house that I just finished. Or we rented RVs for a while. God, bought the RV. I cleaned it. Like, rent this RV out. Or let's just go. I mean, I haven't done a ton of things. I mean, my wife has a mattress store. We were like seven businesses, and that wasn't long ago. And I realized that I was now striving to work and almost like wishing well, genie in a bottle to God. Now bless what I just did. I did it for you, so bless it. And he said to me, he said, you got it out of order. He said, it's sudden, but I want you to have faith and walk with me, and I'll tell you what work to do. And I had been that way in the early days because I had to, but then I got to a place of comfortable where I didn't have to be that way because I had enough success and money in the bank. So it's almost like I'm from the South. We like grits. It's almost like saying, hey, I got a bowl of salt. Can you give me some grits? Yeah. You say, hey, I got a bowl of grits. I need some salt. So the grits is the meal. Salt is the addition. Faith is the meal. Faith is the main thing.
Come on.
Works is the addition. So guess what? When God told me three Fridays ago, hey, it's Friday morning and I'm in this journey. I'm like, God, tell me what to do today. Bring deals to me, bring networking relationships to me. And he has been very faithful. And it's a Friday. He said, today, your work is to stay home with Eva. It's been all day. Oh, wait. Like, that's not work. No, that's the work I've assigned you to.
Come on.
I want you to nurture your wife today. Or the time that it's, hey, I need you. God told me this last week. It was the day before school went back for our kids. Take Wednesday off and you spent all day with the kids. school starts tomorrow. And so God starts showing me that I'm not working from a place of faith. And it's amazing. It's amazing how when I live in that, I have faith and I do what God tells me to do. And I know that's a little wax poetic here. It's not that magic, but there's a principle there of saying, God, I trust you to bring the right opportunities to me. I trust you to bring the right sales to me. I trust you to bring the right networking relationships to me. I trust you that this business is not mine. I'm simply a steward. So you're the boss and you're the CEO and I'm the CEO of it. And I trust you to lead this. I'm telling you, my life changed back to where it was, to where his yoke is easy, his burden is light. Walking in him and walking in grace is work. Going to the gym's work, but going to the gym's not punishment. It's not striving. Yeah. It's work, but it's easy because I'm doing it with God. And I'm telling you, man, that shifted me dramatically.
Go ahead and preach then. That was a whole word. Man, so much to glean from that. Just that idea of faith without works and getting it out of order and how easy it is to get it out of order. And also what I also hear in that is you've got to do that deep inner work too. It's like a lot of times we hold on to things and we just let them go. And we're like, no, I'm going to go headstrong into this business.
Yeah.
But what's that issue that you need to address so you can be fully whole in all areas? And then the business will be blessed. That's so good. And also the idea of not only work, but that idea we work to enter into rest. And the rest sometimes is the work. And like you said, yes, your assignment from God was to be with your family. And that was the work. Oh, it's so good. That reminds me. So I worked for a ministry for about 4 years doing video. They were like online. They were on Daystar TV stuff. So I did the video and the editing for that. And then when me and my wife got married and then we found out we were pregnant with our son, it got close to the time for us to have him. And I just felt led to take a year off and be fully committed stay-at-home dad. And I mean, I was in a space where I was hoping to have a side hustle. Nothing like jumped off yet, but I was in a stable ministry job, content, happy, could have been good. I could have also built something on the side. And I just felt like the Lord was saying, no, your work at this time is to serve the local church, which I play drums for my church. And I did that. And that was the assignment, play drums at your church and take care of this kid. And that's what I did. And just looking back now, I know that it's already set me up to where I am now. And it's just, that's encouraging to hear it said from a different light. And it was also that idea of, I think about it, I heard it said this way. A lot of times we mistake the opportunities in assignments, and don't miss your assignments by chasing the next opportunity. Because, you know, opportunities will come and go, but assignments are the opportunities with the breath of God on them. And that comes out of your obedience and your faithfulness in the current season. And a lot of people miss that because it's so easy. Like you said, when you've got this drive in you to make something and to go after these things, when it flips into that striving mode and you're no longer doing the faith first, then the works, and all of a sudden you're just working and thinking God's going to be, you know, magic jackpot in the sky, make it happen kind of thing. Man, and it's so interesting to hear. Oh, I could.
Yeah, so what about you're getting me started, man. We need to do this together.
Come on.
So, what if the enemy's tactic towards us? We often say, "Well, I don't have the opportunities. The enemy's out to get me. You know, I'm broke, busted, disgusted." What? But what if when you reach a certain level of success, the enemy's tactic is to give you too many opportunities?
That's good.
Because in that diluting God's purpose for your life, opportunities can busy you to the point that you're not effective at all. And I mean, it can even destroy your life. You know, Paul calls the devil at this point, he's not even God's enemy anymore. God, Jesus defeated him once. He's our adversary, the devil, and he's out to get us. And so I wonder if sometimes the opportunities, especially successful entrepreneurs, get the frequency of opportunities, even if not successful, you just have an entrepreneurial nature and you know how to do things and get started and find success, that too many opportunities can also, or even sometimes more often than not, be the trip up that can destroy our life. You know, as a pastor, I've been able to sit at the bedside of people as they die, or at least in the last few days, sometimes as they die. And I have never heard anybody, when just reflecting over their life, and it happens fairly often, you'd be surprised, and you may have been in some of those rooms too, you'd be surprised at how often you get to talk with somebody about some really deep thoughts as they're, even in the last months sometimes. I've never heard somebody say, man, I wish I would have made that extra $1 million. I wish I would have started one more business. I wish I would have, you know, invested in one more 401k. No, what they say is, I wish I would have spent some more time with my wife. I wish I would have been there for my kids. It's those things that matter. And sometimes these busyness takes us from the good one.
Come on.
Of you staying home to raise your son.
Yeah, come on.
The good one. And anyways, get us going, man.
Yeah, dude, even now, as I've like at times definitely felt the weight and the struggle of trying to build something, especially in this kind of space. And it was a good reminder to hear that for sure.
Yeah.
Man, I'm curious. So this idea of building a business God's way, how do you build a business God's way?
Partnership with God. I had this thought, is that the enemy is not out to do opposite, to create things opposite of God. His tactic is counterfeit. You know, he takes things that seem, that are godly, and counterfeits them slightly to get different results or have less value. I see that there's a lot of things that's being taught in the world today that seem good, virtuous, and maybe even, I dare say, godly, even when taught by non-godly people, that are slightly different. If I had a $100 bill that was counterfeit, a $100 bill that was real. The reality is me and you, maybe you can, I can't probably not tell the difference unless it was blatantly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, the enemy takes godly things and slightly changes them to where Christians like, oh, I still think that's godly. I think for us, it has been a commitment to constantly press it and say, God, obviously, I'm going to get to heaven one day and find out I did a lot of things that I thought was godly or right. That because none of us have theology on law and know that this is everything God taught. I mean, we see in part, we learn in part. Yeah. Everything's just a little bit of truth, right? But my heart towards God is to say, God, this is your business. So just know my ears listen,
mm-hmm.
and I am correctable. Now, it's taken a couple brick walls of correction. Sometimes it wasn't that still small voice. It was God letting me hit a wall of correction to say, no, that's not exactly the way I want you to do it. That's going to hurt you. You know, we know business. We know. And I think we measure our businesses by the fruit. Is it producing life? Is it producing, love and patience and kindness in our own lives? I can tell when I'm getting a little bit off course.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel when the striving comes. I can feel when the anxiety comes that's directly related to me doing this out of my own strength. I had a coaching session with a lady yesterday who's a close friend of our family, and she's got a phenomenal business. And her and her husband have recently found out they're with child. And we were able to talk through that. And I was able to say some of the things that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, you know, you're driven. You have an entrepreneurial grace on your life. And this season, I feel like God's telling you to make a baby. And be with your husband and continue the pace that you're at with your business, but you don't have to push right now. And so I think the fact is that when we do business God's way, we do it with God.
Yeah.
It's with and in cadence in sync with him. And what your business looks like in this season may be different than my business looks like in a concurrent season. Because right now this is God's business and he grows at his pace and he slows at his pace. I heard this said longer, and I'll kick it back to you. And I heard this taught, and it's very brief. And the guy was teaching about the difference in rhythm and pace. He used the illustration of the human heart. My heart at all times should be the same rhythm. My rhythm shouldn't change. If my rhythm changes, it's AFib, it's something wrong. I have to go and get checked out if my rhythm changes. But my pace changes throughout the day, all day. If I go out here and sprint, which would be really bad for me to try to do right now, I'm going to have a heart rate of 140. Beats per minute. Well, if I came in here, my heart stayed at 140 beats per minute, and tonight at 10 o'clock at 140 beats per minute, I ain't going to sleep. If my resting heart rate is 60 and I try to run, I'm going to collapse.
Seriously.
So although the pace changes, the rhythm never does. And I believe in God's world, our pace changes based on the demand on our life in that season, that week, that day, whatever it be. And our rhythm can't. And our rhythm is more things like, how do I spend time with God? Sometimes I may have 4 hours to spend with God. Sometimes I may have 4 minutes to spend with God. But the rhythm is, I'm spending time with God.
Yeah.
I'm focusing on what's most important. I'm making sure I'm finding rest, even if it's brief. My rhythm is always this. Pace may go up and down depending on the demand, but my rhythm can't change. And I believe when we do things with God and do things in a godly rhythm, then He's able to raise and lower the pace as needed. And our heart stays healthy. So maybe that helps.
That's so good. Yeah. Recently, I've been saying it as the rhythm of rest. And I feel like that that took a whole nother level to that and layer to that. I'm going to have to sit and re-listen to that and see how I can even ponder that some more. That's so good. Oh, man. So I'm curious. I'm just looking through some different, we still could take this so many different ways, but I want to be mindful of our time. I'm curious. I only have a few more questions for you. So if you could say, like, what's that the biggest piece of advice you've learned in all the areas that you've been through and the life that you've lived that you would want to share? Say there's a younger you out there, maybe. Well, yeah. we'll go that route. What would be that big piece of advice you would want to share with them?
Yeah, I wish I could go back and talk to younger me. I know we hear this all the time by people that have been down the road a bit. Chill out. God's purpose for our life will be discovered in the time that He wants us to discover, and it will probably be discovered progressively. Mm-hmm. I was so driven at 25, 26, 27 years old to the point of completely unhealthy. I'm 41 now, just to give context. I was trying to be what I wasn't. I was trying to be everything to everyone, and I was not comfortable in my own skin. I got invited to a pastoral table on a weekly basis. I sat in pastoral team meetings at a very, very large church in Oklahoma with people that were incredible preachers, amazing singers, like brilliant theologians. I'm sitting over there with boots on because I got to go get on the roof after that meeting and check on the AC units, thinking, why am I not all those things? Why am I not these brilliant giftings? And I didn't value what God was putting in me, because now I fast forward 15 years and those people are all my dear friends today. In fact, everyone that's sitting at the table is my dear friend. And they all respect and value the grace on my life to the point that I helped them in these arenas that they always saw me shining. But I could not recognize that in my own self because I was so trying to be like them, I wasn't being me. I was sitting in a graduate level class with a guy named Bobby Clinton. Bobby Clinton's a brilliant man that had one basically theme of his whole life. And his whole life's theme was talking about the seasons of a man's life, woman's life. When he studied 2000 post-biblical and biblical leaders. And he found that generally speaking, for everyone he studied, he finds life comes in 4 to 5 seasons. And what those seasons are, and we've all heard this in different ways, but this is a biblical reference. And the first season of life, the first approximately 20 years, give or take, is those formation years. You're learning, you know, the first years you learn how to ride a bike, how to feed yourself, you like spaghetti? Do you like broccoli? Do you like green beans? You get into the teenage years. Do I like baseball? Do I like football? Do I like art? Do I like music? You know, do I want to drive a car? Do I want to drive a motorcycle? You know, you're starting to say, do I believe in God? Do I not believe in God? Who's Jesus? Those things happen. What do I want to do in life? But then you get to your early 20s and then you start moving down the road of college or some kind of mentorship or something like that. I'm pursuing like my direction in life. And in those next 15 to 20 years tend to be exploratory. I try a little bit of everything, a lot of everything, probably not good at much of it, but we give it a shot. A lot of failure. But then you move into that third season, and that third season he calls the productive years of your life, the years that you sort of drill down on. This is what I'm doing in life. There's anomalies and outliers to this, but generally speaking, 35 to 40 years old, you start owning in. And I remember that moment for me, owning in on this is who I am. And this is what I'm called to do. And for the next 20 years of your life, you get to just do that really well and hit your highest earning years, your most successful years, your most well-known years, build reputation the most in those years. And then you move into the later part of your life, which tends to be a legacy year, to where I'm going to give back to people behind me what I took a lifetime to earn. I wish I could go back to Cole Phillips in those 20s and say, dude, you know, hurry. No, I was going to get you there. I would have probably got there faster because I contended for so long to be all these different things that I missed opportunities to be who he called me to be. I probably, and I think a lot of us have, wasted a ton of time doing that. So I wish I could go tell me to chill out and just follow God, try the things that he has me to, because I don't go just got sowing wild oats. That's what I'm saying. More of be secure with who God called you to be and try all these things so you figure out. I would have ended up with, you're an entrepreneur, you're a businessman, and you can speak both kingdom and secular language to talk to businessmen who are saved and not. That's what God's called you to do. And I wish I could have got here sooner.
Man, that's so good. And I think it is so interesting because being in this space of like kingdom entrepreneurs, it's really great to hear you're also a pastor as well, but those that may not reach that level of pastoral leadership, they're still pastoring. You know, if you're leading people, you're pastoring people. And I feel like a lot of people, they get it. It's this or that, especially in a lot of, you know, church culture for us. We see, you know, like the celebrity pastor, like you mentioned, you're literally in a room of super talented people, not realizing your own talent. And it's that idea of comparison that's so easy to get us tripped up. Now, I'm curious to take this a step further. So say someone, a younger you is listening or watching at home, and they're in that space of not sure what their purpose is, not sure what their calling is. Like they're driven, they've got these different things. What is something you would say to them as far as to figuring that out and knowing it's really their purpose and not just something mindlessly chasing and they think is?
Yeah, I think I've heard it said a few times that you don't decide what your purpose is. You discover what your purpose is. I don't get to pick it. I get to find it. Yeah. That's God's goodness. God designed us. He made the machine. He knows what it's made for. Right.
Sure.
I think the absolute number one thing you have to do is Timothy needed Paul. The disciples needed a Jesus.
Come on.
Elisha needed an Elijah. I think the best thing you can do, and I do this now, I go sit at the feet of people that can pour into me, uh-huh. disciple me, counsel me, that love me,
yeah.
that aren't intimidated, nor are they insecure. And I've had those leaders that day, and I found out that as they were discipling me, you're actually insecure. So you drive me in a direction that you want me to go. But there's some people that really are fathers and mothers in the faith. One generation speaks to another. I believe that this whole thing passes on generationally. And when you find those older saints, and no matter, you're going to be 5 years, 10 years, 30 years yeah. older. When you find those older people that can really look at you and see the purpose of God in you, then I believe God shows them how to pull that out of you through conversations, through mentorship, through encouragement, through correction, and all of that. I've got three individual people. The pastor that passed away was primarily that for 20 years to me, but now I have three people. I have one of my close friends who he's younger than me, Pastor Jordan. He's the senior pastor of our church, and spiritually, I have submitted my life to him to say, God made you my shepherd, so you speak to me pastorally. I have a guy in business that's almost 80 years old, exceptionally wealthy, but you wouldn't know it. You saw him, and he pours into me about our business. And then I've got a couple others that help me on things such as like a strategy, or you know, I got these guys that now have moved flip houses in Atlanta, so I have people that pour my life. So I think that's the big way of doing it. I think yeah. the kingdom is passed generation to generation, relationally, iron sharpening, and one person ministers to another. I think that's how you discover, not determine, purpose of your life, and you walk into it.
Come on. So good. Whew, this has been good. This has been like a masterclass of so many gems. People, yeah, I'll definitely have to link your info so people can connect with you, follow you. Please. Get this because you need to have people in your life like Cole. And yeah, I agree, man. I can think of my pastor, my senior pastor that I'm submitted to. And it's just so important to have those voices in your life, to have that wise counsel in your life, because it's definitely going to get you exactly where you're supposed to be. And to continue on, because I want to wrap up fairly quickly. I only have a couple questions. So this next one, I love asking this one to pretty much most of my guests because, give me one second. Got the baby monitor and my wife's home now. So I was like, uh-oh, I can hear a little one crying in the background. She's crushing it. Grateful for her. But yeah, so I like to ask this question because it's great. And you mentioned it yourself. Being on the other side of people's final days and hearing what they have to say. I'm curious to ask you, so you're on your deathbed at the end of the wonderful life that you've had. What do you want to be remembered for?
That's a good one. I think about that often, actually. I want to be remembered for a man that loved his wife well, that his kids cherished and loved, that they could say back on my life, Dad wasn't perfect, but Dad loved us, and Dad was there. He was present. Same for my wife. And I want the people that have become sons and daughters to us in the faith to know that we loved and poured into them and gave them everything we got. You know, I think Paul says it well. He's empty. He ended his life as a cup poured out.
Yeah.
There was nothing left to give because he gave it all. And I think that is the ultimate, because you know what? In eternity, if I have M millions, B billions, ain't none of it gone. You know, I want to leave an inheritance, but I want my most important inheritance to be the faith and legacy that God was first, and I gave everything I had to the people around me.
Come on. So good. Man, I love that. And I agree. It's so important to think about that question. So with that said, I also like to flip it, because a lot of times I've seen various podcasts and it's interview kind of style. I like to flip it and ask the guests if they have any questions for me. So do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, I would ask you, what do you want to be said about you? At the end of life?
So good. Yeah. Similar to what you said, that idea of obviously I want it to be made known that God was first. And something that's been really driving me in more recent years is that idea of being faithful. Because for me, it's that idea of showing someone that God's so faithful to you. And it's that level of being faithful to him and to the people that you're called to be faithful to. And even as you said, like wanting to leave wealth, you think about generational wealth. And as you mentioned that, I even thought of it to the degree of what is wealth really? Aside from the money aspect, but the spiritual aspects, like, and I think of it that way. It's like, I want to leave the generational wealth that surpasses the monetary, but the spiritual generational wealth, the integrity, the character, like that's what's important to me.
That's really cool, man. I think legacy's what it's all about.
Oh, yeah.
You got to think, man, because you live 200 years from now, if Jesus has not returned,
right,
there'll be people alive simply because you are.
Yeah.
Because they come from your lineage. And I believe that that's the most significant.
Oh, yeah.
How generation to generation you live, the people that come behind you. I love it, man. That's what matters.
Come on. That's right. Amen to that. All right. So one final question. This one's interesting. So I just started this new segment where I have a previous guest leave a question for a future guest, knowing who they are or what it is. I'm not even sure what he asked, so it might not even be relevant. So if it's not, then we can definitely, we'll fix it in post.
I'll chat GPT it over here.
Right, for sure. So I'm not even sure what it is, but I will play it real quick and hopefully you'll be able to hear it through my speakers. And then later on, I'll add it into the actual video itself.
Okay.
Let's see.
Yeah. My question is, who in your life do you feel like you need to reach out to that you've been not reaching out to for whatever reason, procrastinating or just you haven't had the time, but you know that conversation would be healing or would be beneficial to you and to them? Why haven't you done it and when will you do it?
Oof. Wow. Man,
I thought he was going to ask me what my favorite football team was.
I did too. Like, I wasn't ready for that one, honestly. But man, that was a great question.
Yeah, that's like a little bit on the convicting side. I'd say right. A little bit on the convicting side.
Right.
Good Lord. I mean, obviously I shouldn't probably say a name.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely think I got somebody. I've never been asked that in my life. And that is the coolest question might have ever been asked.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I was like, man, he's coming in hot. You know, that's very personal. And obviously it's for self-reflection there, obviously. But But yeah, that's a good one to keep in mind.
I think my answer is like, yeah, I got somebody.
Yes. That's the answer. And yes, it will probably be very healing to do that. And I need to do that. Man, that's a great one.
Was that not a fire conversation? I know you're going to leave better than before you tuned into it. And if you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to hit the subscribe button on screen. And if you want to continue watching more inspiring and encouraging content, you can click here. If you really got something out of this, or if you have any feedback so that we can make this show even better, don't hesitate, drop a comment below. As always, thank you, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.